Welcome to the KRMG In-Depth Podcast. I'm Russell Mills. You've heard a lot about the Green New Deal, a Democratic plan to end the use of fossil fuels. While that idea may be a little bit scary to Oklahomans, the truth is the transition to renewable energy is already well underway, and we can either get on board or get left behind. At least that's the opinion of a Tulsa native with decades in the oil industry, and a man who says his thinking on renewable energy was turned around by another famous Oklahoma oil man, T. Boone Pickens. Here's my conversation, complete and unedited, with Jack Kerfoot. We're on with Jack Kerfoot, who's got a background in science and business. He worked in the energy industry for many, many years. I think you're retired now. I don't know, but I know you're busy writing books.
Yes, I still do occasional consulting, but I've just about retired, especially I was having to travel quite a bit overseas, and these days that's not a prudent thing to do. So
overseas travel sort of deprecated.
Yes, indeed.
Unfortunately. Well, what your passion is talking about renewable energy, and your background is in, well, I'll let you explain, folks. Kind of where are you coming? What angle are you approaching renewable energy from? That's terrible English.
Well, actually, my background is after I came back from Vietnam, I started university at the University of Oklahoma and graduated in 76 with a degree in geophysics. At that time, America had a different type of energy crisis, of oil shortage. And so I went to work in the energy industry, and that took me around the world working with heads of state and ministers and sheiks and some tycoons. But what happened is 2006, I had an opportunity to have dinner with T. Boone Pickens, who unfortunately passed away last year, but a longtime oil man and a new advocate for renewable energy. And so that helped me start to understand the importance and the advantages of new renewable energy. So to me, I look at it from several different reasons. Moving to renewable energy is just like when America and the world started to move from timber to coal and then to oil and natural gas. It's a transition to another type of fuel. So instead of having the gas pipelines, we'll have the buried power lines, which will carry the clean green energy from the wind turbines and the solar panels.
Okay, I'm still sort of reeling over the fact that even though you were an OU grad, T. Boone Pickens sat down, had dinner. I'm teasing.
No, I understand. Well, we were both in the oil and gas industry, so that's the common factor.
There you go. Okay. So he was willing to look past that whole sooner thing. I think you make an excellent point, which is that this is kind of inevitable, what we're talking about, right? The switch off of fossil fuels to, I don't know if it's going to be hydroelectric, solar, nuclear, a combination of all that. Wind generation is becoming a big deal here in Oklahoma. But I don't expect it to be a smooth, easy road, and I don't expect it to happen at the same time everywhere. In other words, it's going to be a transition.
I think you're exactly right. It will be a transition. And just like there are places in the U.S. where there are geological basins with petroleum, there are areas in the U.S. that have more renewable energy, wind, solar, geothermal, than others. I think one of the new energy centers of green energy will be New Mexico, Texas, and Oklahoma. All have a strong wind and solar resources, and all have made dramatic moves over the last 15 years, moving from coal and natural gas to wind and solar. Another area will be my state of Oregon. We have the strongest winds in the entire United States in the offshore. We have strong winds onshore. We have solar. We have geothermal. We have power lines from our dam projects in the northern part of our state that go down to California that already are selling power to California. California is struggling to try to get to 100% renewable energy, but with their population and the amount of energy they consume, that will be a challenge for them to do it unless they import power. And the other area we're going to see a new major energy center is off the east coast of the U.S. there's a major building boom right now with offshore wind farms from Maine all the way down to North Carolina, and they're being built to replace the coal-fired power plants because of cost and also age, and also even some of the nuclear power plants along the East Coast. So we are going through that transition, but it will depend on where we are and how we make that move and the progressiveness of the states.
So let's dial in a little bit on Oklahoma, and I know you're very familiar. Not only did you go to school at OU, but you lived in Tulsa. In fact, you kind of grew up here, didn't you?
I grew up in Tulsa, that's right. Actually also worked in Oklahoma City at one point in my career, but I've lived in a lot of places in my life,
right.
Yes.
So, and done a lot of world travel, and you mentioned that earlier, but you know Oklahoma. It's also obviously still a player in the energy, even though you probably heard about the WPX deal. We're not super tickled about that in Tulsa. But hey, at least they're still in the state, didn't move to Houston. So, you know, we'll take that as a silver lining. But my point being is I'm hearing PSO and others really kind of putting some money into electrical generation by wind. And by trying to start to build these transmission lines and figure out a way to distribute it, because that's been the rub, right? My vague understanding of wind power is it's not that difficult to generate once you get those giant things built. It's getting it from the giant fan to the, you know, guy's house to power his refrigerator that's the issue.
That's really the issue, and that's where our legislators need to start looking at ways to remove barriers. And we have to realize that when we get permits to lay power lines, it requires approval from the federal and also groups like the EPA and several groups as well, the state, the counties, and the cities. And sometimes one permit gets modified, which requires it to be bounced back all the way to the federal level. So, yes, streamlining those policies, and we're seeing that in some states. We're seeing that in states like Maine and New Jersey. New Jersey's gone through and looked at their offshore wind development and said, there's no reason that we have to do a sequential order of permits. A lot of these permits can be done in parallel. So that's not 2 years off the development of these major offshore wind farms. The same thing in Oklahoma. The Wind Chaser was able to move forward to a degree, but not to the fullest amount or the fullest capability of the wind in the state. And we have to realize those wind turbines, just like oil and gas, that a farmer gets a percentage of the royalty from the production and from the oil and gas, they also get a royalty from a percentage from the power generated from the wind turbine. So it's an advantage to the farmers, it's an advantage for the consumer, because the cheapest form of power in the United States on a levelized basis is onshore wind. It's about 5.2 cents per kilowatt hour. Costs are continuing to drop because power output's increasing. The average cost of power in the U.S. is about 13.2 cents a kilowatt hour. Oklahoma, I think you're around about 11 cents per kilowatt hour. So from that standpoint, it has the opportunity to drive our power costs down. And we have to realize, instead of having jobs on the production platforms or on the producing oil and gas field, those fields get depleted. And when the field's gone, those jobs disappear. But when we have a wind farm, they are high-paying jobs, and they don't disappear. As long as the wind blows and the sun shines, those jobs stay in the state.
It's ironic that you use that term, as long as the wind blows and the sun shines, I thought, and as the grass grows, because that was a lot of the treaties that our government signed with Native American nations that, you know, we subsequently broke. But
yes.
And the reason I bring that up is because that's the other wild card here in Oklahoma. You don't just have local, city, county, state, federal. You've got the tribal governments also to contend with and organizations like NCOG that have their own concerns and their own rules and their own guidelines. So it just is that one extra layer of, I guess, complication. And I think what I hear you saying is the legislature needs to, the governor, all these entities need to sit down together and say, look, you know, we need to expedite this and make it happen, because this is going to save our people a lot of money and provide good jobs. Is that kind of what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And also from the Native American perspective, as far as the air quality is concerned and the advantages to the environment, there are big pluses as well. And for many tribes in the state of Oklahoma, that's a very important part of their culture and their belief. So there are a lot of commonalities and common reasons to move forward together. But you're right, we have to have that common dialogue and work together to achieve the best for our state and for our country.
So do those giant turbines, do they kill all the birds and cause cancer? Because I've heard some interesting tales.
Well, I have heard that comment as well about windmills causing cancer. I have seen absolutely no evidence whatsoever to say that there is any truth to that whatsoever. Actually, as far as the birds are concerned, well, the wind turbines now, before they actually go in and are installed, they're actually consultation with the local Audubon groups and the federal Audubon groups as well to mitigate in the risk of any type of wildlife as well. The new turbines now are turning slower. So in many times, the reason that we have a bird death with the wind turbine is a smaller bird may be chased by a larger predator like a hawk, and it's actually using the wind turbine as a way to escape from that hawk, and then the slower moving and larger hawk may be actually killed when it strikes the blade chasing the other predator. So from that standpoint, the risk of destruction of animal life is extremely low. Anytime we build anything, we have to recognize that we have to look at the environment and look at the environmental impact of that and adjust accordingly.
So we heard on the debate stage when there was more than a couple sentences strung together, it didn't happen very often, but they did talk about the Green New Deal as opposed to Mr. Biden's energy plan. I'm not sure that we've really seen the president's energy plan. I presume there is one. But can you kind of compare and contrast what some the pie in the sky, I think, that some people see the Green New Deal as what's actually practical over the next couple of decades?
I think we have to recognize that the representative Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal was based on no understanding of any of the energy issues in the United States or in the world. And the reality of it was it sounded good and played good on the headlines, but to be blunt, it was ludicrous. It's done more to harm the development of renewable energy than anything else. The actual fact, the start of the move to renewable energy actually happened in 2005. And in 2005, oil had hit $60 a barrel, and people were concerned it was going to go higher. It actually hit 100 2 years later. And so they put incentives in place for nuclear energy, trying to develop more energy in this country for oil and gas, which resulted in the fracking, the development and improvement in fracking techniques, and incentives for renewable energy, particularly wind and solar as well. So in 2005, 51% of our power in the U.S. was from coal, and renewable energy, predominantly hydro, was about 4%, maybe 5%. Well, fast forward 15 years later, April of this year, actually what we saw is the amount of power generated from coal had dropped from 51% down to 22%, and renewables had gone from 4% or 5% up to 23%. And the reason of that is economics, first and foremost. And that's just on the power stage of what I call the turning on the lights and the local utilities. There's been a tremendous move by the private sector to fund individual wind farms and solar parks to buy power to run operations from a broad range of companies, Walmart, Costco, General Motors, Ford, Macy's, of course, Apple, Google, Facebook. All of these companies are using or funding the development of new wind energy and solar energy projects. And the reason is cost. Not only they're able to sign a 15-year power purchase agreement for maybe 5.5 cents per kilowatt hour. They go through a utility. The utility will typically charge them peak rate hours, which may be 200 or 300% higher than the average utility price that they pay. So they get stable green energy for significantly low prices. So from that standpoint, we're seeing the move to renewable energy happen with the 2005 Energy Act, and the tax credits that were in place are now slowly easing off. And what's happened, the reason they put the tax credits was to invest, to get people to invest in new technology. So in 2005, the typical output for one wind turbine was about 1 megawatt. Today, we're seeing wind turbines with outputs of 10, 12, and 14 megawatts. Power output is getting higher. Costs are coming down for construction. So we're seeing the power up cost actually drop like a rock, and we're seeing the same thing on the solar side as well.
Meanwhile, and you mentioned this too, it's for the people building those wind generation systems, they're being successful. They're making money. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I see this as kind of inevitable, because as you said, it's not just about being environmentally aware, although that's a nice added benefit. That the fact is that it's really become economically viable. In fact, perhaps more efficient, like you said, in many cases, than powering up via fossil fuel.
Well, for coal, to be honest, right now, the price of coal, particularly transportation, has gone up significantly. Rail is the common way the coal is typically transported. So that's anywhere from 2 to 4 times higher than wind. Even with natural gas prices that have dropped significantly, the cheapest form of power still is onshore wind, followed by solar, followed by hydro. Then we get natural gas, and then we go into things like geothermal. But coal is now extremely high, and then the thing that's more expensive is nuclear right now. So from that standpoint, the economics are there. Another factor is on the federal level or the national level is renewable energy allows us to achieve energy independence, which we haven't had since the 1940s, when we were completely self-sufficient for oil and gas and coal in the 1940s. So that's a huge strategic advantage for us as a country. Driving down our power costs means that our operating costs will be lower, so we can be more competitive in manufacturing. And manufacturing generates new jobs. And also renewables generate jobs. The biggest demand the job that has the highest demand right now is for wind turbine technician. So it's technical jobs and it's also engineering jobs, mechanical engineers, solar engineers, electrical engineers. So a wide range of engineering groups from that standpoint.
And you made a good point, which is that when they explore, they find the oil, they drill, they pump the oil, and then eventually that well dries up, and then so do the jobs.
Exactly right. Absolutely. So
this doesn't happen.
Renewables is long-term job security.
Wow. Well, listen, I said I was going to take 10 minutes. I lied. I've just almost gone 20. But it's fascinating stuff to me, Jack, and I really appreciate your time, but I have got to get some other stuff done. It's Friday, and I'm way under the gun.
No worries.
So I'll ask you this. Is there anything else that you'd like to point out or something that you'd like to stress before we wrap up here?
Well, I think the main thing I'd like to stress is that from a legislative standpoint, the question isn't whether or not we're having climate change. Excuse me. The question really is, how do we make this happen? How do we remove the barriers to make it easier to draw more dollars and investment dollars and more minds to develop new technology and renewables and new technology to in place to make this transition? That's the question we need to look at, excuse me, not just the fact that we need to chant Green New Deal. We need to actually talk about how do we make it happen.
Yeah, it really ultimately does not matter if climate change is happening because of human activity or not, whether you believe
right.
science or you believe politics or whatever. It is happening regardless of why, and that has to be addressed. So
absolutely.
So, Jack, I really appreciate your thoughts on this, and let's not wait another year. Let's see if we can talk again in the near future, okay?
Whenever you need someone to discuss this, it'd be my pleasure. Thank you,
brother,
for the time.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You've been listening to KRMG In-Depth, the podcast. I'm always looking for stories about the people, places, and politics of Oklahoma. I'm easy to find on Facebook, or you can always email me and the entire KRMG news team. The email address is news@krmg.com. I'm Russell Mills. Thanks for the listen.